Good morning, and thank you for joining us at Philadelphia Smart CEO's Think Tank discussion on navigating the unique challenges of a family business, hosted in partnership with the Initiative for Family Business and Entrepreneurship at St. Joseph's University. Today, we'll be sharing stories of some of our Family Award honorees on how they run their family business. I'm Mary Nicoletti, Director for the Initiative for Family Business and Entrepreneurship, and I'll be serving as the moderator for today's discussion. I'm joined by a group of CEOs and executives of multi-generational family businesses based in the Greater Philadelphia area. Let's begin by meeting our panelists. We'll go around the table and have each person introduce himself or herself, including your name, your title, and your company. Let's start to my right.
Yeah, hi. Mark Brownstein with Brownstein Group, president and CEO of the company. And we're a brand communication company. Some of our clients are Comcast, IKEA, DuPont, United Healthcare. What we do is we create content, we differentiate clients who are in undifferentiated industries, and we do it through digital marketing, PR, social media, analytics.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Taylor Fernley. I'm CEO of Fernley & Fernley. We're a fifth-generation association management company. We work with leaders of nonprofit, membership-based organizations who find their time and their resources are stretched beyond their limits.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Anthony Balea of Balea Enterprises, and I'm the president of Balea Workspace Professionals, and we teach organizations how to retain and attract top talent in Delaware Valley.
Good morning. Tom Holt from Holt Logistics Corp. We're a 90-year-old company. Fourth generation is in the business. We work in the supply chain logistics space, mainly focused on the maritime side of the business.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Kevin Fox. I'm the managing partner of the Capstone Group. We're a risk management, insurance brokerage, and employee benefits consulting firm. My brother and I, a third partner, founded Capstone in 2013, so definitely newer than some of most of the family businesses in the room. So. Anxious to hear everybody's feedback on the topics today.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Goldenberg from Delaware Steel Company. We are a wholesale steel distributor located in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. I'm third generation in the business, started in the late 50s, and we specialize in damaged and off-market goods.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mary Weldon, CEO and Financial Director at Uniform Gear. We're a family business that started in 2000 when my husband retired from the Philadelphia Police Department and realized that he had no outlet for purchasing uniform supplies. So we started, now our daughters are with us, and we're moving.
Hi, Mark Mansfield, CEO of William G. Mansfield. We are a legal advertising firm. We help large to small law firms publish legal notices. And when I say legal notices, you open up the newspaper and you know those notices that nobody reads? That's what we do, but it's required by law. So we are a service business, making sure those notices are correct, making sure they're ready for court, or that corporations that need them to qualify as a business. We've been around since 1935. I'm current fourth generation. And all these topics are extremely interesting because in my 17 years, I'm still learning every day how to work with family members.
Scott McDevitt with TransLogistics. We started in 1994. I am the founder or CEO of the company, and we're a third-party logistics company.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Formica, president of FMI Marketing Solutions. We produce direct mail campaigns for companies and have also developed some software to help integrate digital marketing in their mix.
Hello, my name is Carla Trotman. I'm the Executive Vice President of Electrosoft Incorporated. We are an electronics contract manufacturer. We specialize in board, assembly, cable, wiring harnesses, and box builds. Our major clients are the Department of Defense and a lot of large OEM industrial companies.
Gary Banks. I am the President of Banks Industrial Group. We're an industrial services company that we provide unique solutions to maintenance problems in facilities, anywhere from a parking garage all the way to a nuclear power plant.
Well, thank you all for the intros. Let's dive right into the questions. So to kick it off, I'd like to start with this first question. What were your family business's founding principles, and how have they evolved over time, especially as new generations entered the business? And I think Lisa Formica wanted to start with that.
Okay, thank you. So when our business started, it was very small. So the founding principles were simple, just do the best you can for your client. Of course, as we've grown 35 years later, we have our clients and our stakeholders. So those principles have evolved to incorporate everybody. And we've developed some core values that we need to be a little better. I have my three brothers are partners, and so we're still working on, you know, embracing them, so to speak. But it's interesting how going from just a, you know, three or four employees, and all you had to do was worry about servicing your clients, to now having to, you know, really embrace literally hundreds of people as we evolve.
If I might comment on building off of what you said, Lisa, which is very good. We found that the founding principles within Fernley and Fernley, this is Taylor Fernley, is really more evolutionary than revolutionary. We're finding out that by having a very clear sense of roles and responsibilities of family members is absolutely vital. Having a shared vision of where the company is going, whatever goes on behind closed doors, however heated those discussions may be, you need to walk out of that room of one voice for the benefit of all your other stakeholders. And Mary, to your point, that one word, communicate, communicate, communicate. Vital.
Thank you, Taylor.
I think this is Lisa at Delaware Steel. I think that for so many of us, the principles, whether it being customer-based, as you said, and getting the clients what they need, Lisa, or what I would say for our company was just, you know, row as hard as you can, hopefully not bail too often. And it was just a matter of getting the job done. Whoever needed to do it, did it. And in today's world, not just family business, I think it's all businesses, really having a clearer vision of what it takes to succeed and not just hard work. Somehow hard work doesn't get the job done, whether it's knowing more metrics or getting more information about what you did, what you're doing. We're just more information and more data sourced as opposed to just working really hard. So although hustle still has its place in the marketplace, I think it's not enough. And I know that what we found at Delaware Steel, it's not just enough to service the clients. It's how you service them, with what, in which way, for how long, and having a much broader vision is necessary in today's world.
If I could expand exactly what you said about services as market, Mansfield Advertising. One of the things, I've been doing this since 1999, and since 1999 to 2017, look how the different ways we now respond to clients. You know, when I came in, it was fax machine. Email was just kind of getting going, and it was just a fax and phone call. And now, I mean, email is, it was just a service business. Now I feel like it's more customer service. You have to do your job, and now it's the response time. And I use the term hyper-reactive. You really need to respond to your client. And now I think, and that's the sad part about it is now is we all have clients maybe all over, but you might get home and you have an email that comes in on your BlackBerry or iPhone, 8 o'clock, you need to get up now and get back to that person right away. Where previously, you would get to work the next morning, there might be a voicemail or somebody might have left you a message or somebody might have written you a letter and you could respond to them that way. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is what creates actual more work. Mm-hmm. And conference calls. I mean, people now have conference calls about conference calls. When before, you didn't really have that. You got your work done. And I think that is what causes, for me, that sometimes that's what keeps me up at night is, oh, I've got to get back to that person. I've got to respond to them. Because if you don't, they're not happy, and they might go somewhere else.
Right. So this is Mark Brownstein with Brownstein Group.
But when I look at principles and how they've evolved over time, it's what's fascinating to see is really how they really haven't evolved over time. The principles and the things that my father put in place in 1964 when he opened up the shop still remain true today and are still relevant. He always says, you know, take care of your clients will take care of you. And then some of our founding values are, you know, we're in a creative business. So he'll say, you got to create ideas that make your client's palms sweat. So you have to walk in your client's shoes, behave with integrity, evolve before it's time to evolve. So those things remain true back in 1964 and have helped Brownstein Group remain on the bleeding edge of where our world and our industry is going today. You know, early to digital, early to social media, early to analytics. So it's you know, if you get the right principles and values in place early, it can guide you for a long time.
I might comment, Mark, on your point, and I agree with you 100%. But I think oftentimes when I hear those words, you know, I think of, you know, we've identified the enemy, and it is me. As we look at people calling you at 8 o'clock and expecting quick turnaround time, that's telling me I haven't done a very good job of setting expectations. That they do this, they want that. But if they're really a customer, a loyal, trusted customer of yours, unless it's a crisis, now that's a whole different story. But in most cases, and we did some analytics one time of actually monitoring how important were these. You know, everything's important, but not everything's critical. And I think we're trying to identify, and we're still fighting that battle, trying to evaluate what's that to allow our people not to have to get it. Because we care, our people need to have a lifestyle. Absolutely, and I'm not there.
Yeah.
And I'm still fighting that battle.
Uh-huh.
But I know we've got to do this because we care so much about our employees,
right,
our associates. They have to have a life. And a life beyond the customer out there right now. But again, where you strike that balance is a challenge I think we all struggle with.
I would jump in and say, this is Lisa Delaware Steele, that I disagree with your perspective somewhat in that I don't know it's a matter of managing their expectations. When I get that call at, as it was this morning at 4:15, because I wasn't sleeping and I didn't get a call, I got a text, so for shame on me for being up. But I felt a shared camaraderie. They feel not just entitled, but they like me enough, trust me enough, you know, they're up, I'm up, we're in it together, kind of a shared space. And I didn't feel intruded upon or pressure. I felt kind of like, he knows I'm on. You know, and what I said is, we're both nuts, we'll talk tomorrow. There's no answer given other than elaborating on that shared, other than an emergency, where I would agree with you. So turning it around to, they feel entitled or privileged or close enough or other perspective. And Mark, on what you were saying about principles and your dad, whom I respect enormously, we too had a lot of family principles and still do. And I agree that they're the same. How you execute them might be dramatically different, but those still founding principles remain true.
This is Anthony Belia with Belia Enterprises. To both your point, Mark and Lisa, about, you know, principles remaining true, I can tell you as me being third generation ownership, I can tell you it's really difficult to not only identify those principles, because a lot of the times those principles are so embedded in the organization that you may even miss it or forget about it because it's not up on the wall and you're not reminded every single solitary day. But I also think that the founding principles are circumstantial. You take a look at what my grandfather and my father and all my relatives went through. Those founding principles were there because of what they had to go through in developing that business, you know, starting it from nothing and all that. But as a guy in third generation that grew up with different circumstances, I can tell you that the next generation is thinking differently about what those founding principles mean to them. Because
we didn't have to go through those struggles. You know, we had a better life because of their dedication and their, you know, what they've created. So I get really passionate about that because sometimes I wonder, you know, what the new generation is really going to be like and how they're going to respect this.
Yeah, this is Lisa Formica. Just to go back to what you said, the next generation and Taylor is going to have a whole different perspective on, you know, getting up at 5 in the morning and responding to a client or staying up until midnight and working on an issue. They have more of a balanced perspective about life and work. So it's kind of interesting how these things will develop, and we're already seeing it, I think.
But don't you think, Lisa, that the word balance in our perspective has to do kind of what you were saying, Taylor? You know, you go home, you have dinner, the kids, sports, whatever. But I think that I know my kids are, right, what's that? My kids are 25 and 27, and what they think of balance is not when they arrive and when they leave. Their day is extremely integrated. They're working from all kinds of places. Yep. It's not so that I can stop at 6 and get dinner on the table and those kinds of things. It's more, you know, and I know, and this is Lisa from Delaware Steel, that it's more the integration as opposed to set boundaries. And I think that that's what the next generation's looking at. Not that they don't want to work at 8 o'clock at night, but it's more fluid than anything we could conceive of.
Yes, this is Lisa again. I totally agree with that. And they want to have a good time with what they're doing.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't have to seem like drudgery.
Which is also,
but it doesn't
more integrated.
Have to be 9 to 5.
But the having fun is also more integrated.
Right.
Their workspace is more fun. Like what we were talking about, Anthony.
Sure.
You know, the workspace is more fun. Their weekends are answering emails and going out with their friends. And it's all much more integrated.
Yeah, Lisa, this is Anthony Belia from Belia Enterprises. As a workspace professional, I can, you know, attest to that and certainly say that, you know, the next generation is seeing a workplace and residential balance. You know, even though we're spending more time in the office than we ever have, certainly at our homes, they're looking for spaces that are more comfortable and more relaxing and don't feel like, you know, I'm going to walk in and drown in a cubicle all day. So, you know, we are teaching those organizations how to think differently, but that doesn't mean that an organization has to just focus on creating a space that's going to attract Gen Y or millennials. That would be ridiculous. We've got to hold on to the top talent of our baby boomer generation and some of those individuals that are key to that. So I think it's a true balance. So I think that's a great point.
Fantastic. I think we're going to move on to the next question, and this is a topic that's really close to my heart, particularly as someone whose background actually began in as a therapist and counselor to families and families having dysfunction. And additionally, we know that research says that family conflict and a breakdown of trust and communication is one of the top things that can cause a family business to fail to transition to the next generation. So the question is, how does your family handle conflict? And is there a formal process that your family has in place for dealing with disagreements? And I think Carla Trotman from Electrosoft Inc. wanted to chime in on that question.
Absolutely. Excuse me. In my family business, my father and my mother started the business 30 years ago, and I have two brothers. And of that dynamic, we do have conflict, obviously, mainly because my parents are now transitioning out, and we're dealing with the succession planning aspect of it. And with succession planning, is also estate planning. And there just seemed that a lot of things were unsaid, and a lot of things were assumed. So I pushed the succession planning process as well as family meetings. So that became the one formal process for us. The family meeting happens once a month. Everyone has got to come. I don't care if you have a hair appointment or whatever, Mom, you need to come and come to the meeting. And what we do is we have a set agenda that we go through. And it's the agenda isn't really like, okay, this is the state of the business, though we do cover that. But we cover what's going on in your life right now, because your life impacts the business, and there's a symbiotic relationship in that. And, for example, between my brothers and I am the most educated as far as having gone to graduate school and have had a corporate career and coming back to run the family business. And what does that mean if we are the three of us are partners. If I'm the one who's writing the checks on the, like, my finances are intermingled and yours aren't, what does your credit look like? And these are questions and discussions that we have. And it's caused us to have make changes to the will and the estate and the way that our succession plan goes. It's nothing worse, and I've seen this, when a family member passes away and now everyone has to figure out what they meant or who was meant to do what in the business. And so we try to bypass future conflict by having these monthly meetings now.
This is Mary Weldon from Uniform Gear. When we started our business, it was my husband and I. And as I said, he's a retired police officer, so he knew where he wanted this business to go. In time, we evolved that. We actually started as a tiny, Jim had a truck. He went to different places, to the police stations and all. So then we needed a warehouse because our garage wasn't big enough to hold everything. Then we started selling out the warehouse. It was a store now. In time, our daughters have joined the business. So there is a lot of conflict because we have two generations. We have Jim, who has his original ideas, how he wanted the business to go. And then we have the girls who have the new ideas. They're in touch with police officers and firefighters and what they want. I find I'm the negotiator, so I think it's important to have somebody in that role that kind of, to expand on what you were saying, Carla, that just kind of says, okay, we have to have these meetings. You have to have all your feelings out. You can't hold them in because that's where the conflicts want to come from. And it seems to be working despite everything that people say, well, that can't work. You can't. That's just not going to happen. But the important part is making sure that everybody gets those feelings out, that everybody's respectful. And one of the things we just had a discussion last week where I said, when someone has an idea, the answer is never no. The answer is we all have to sit down and find a way to make it work. And if it does, if it can't work, then everybody understands why it couldn't work.
You know, over the last 30 years, I bet you I've read
Taylor Firm.
Thank you. That was Mark Brownstein, by the way, on behalf of Taylor Firm. But we have looked at all kinds of, you know, top 20 best ways of handling conflict, and that's not the person I am. I'm a big guy for just going into a room, shutting the door, not slamming, sitting down, creating a safe, respected, kind of a safe harbor, and talking things out. And it has worked most of the time, but every person in this room handles things a little bit differently. Because personalities, politics, whatever it is out there right now. But I suggest that we just have found great success in bringing people together, respect, courtesy, and realizing that whatever we come away with in those discussions, it's in the best interest of the family business and not of the person. And so, there has been rub in many cases in that area. So if there's been any conflict, that's the component of the conflict that we've been addressing. But I don't know if there's any formal one-way fits all with our group. Everybody does it differently, but it's critically important as we need to, again, as I said earlier, walk out of that room of one mind.
This is Scott at Translogistics. What I found within our family, but also in the business, we have four principles of conflict management. They've been very successful for us because there's a framework to go by when there is conflict, because it's called conflict management because you can't avoid conflict, but you can manage it. So the first one is being honest. So when there's an issue, you got to be honest with the other people. If somebody comes to you and says, is something wrong? You say no, you're not being honest. The other one is keeping current. So whenever you have an issue, you address it. You don't wait until you have 15 issues with that person. All of a sudden you dump everything on them. You know, and then it's attack the problem, not the person. That way they're not defensive. You know, someone's coming in late. It's not you're lazy. It's why are you coming in late? Maybe they had issues with their car, with their family. You don't know that kind of stuff. And then the final one is, be honest, keep current, attack the problem of the person, and act, don't react, which means act professionally, don't be defensive. And those four have always worked very well with us within our family. We had it on a refrigerator growing up. It's, you know, I drove them crazy drilling that into them, but it's really worked well. And we have within our organization also.
What were the instructions?
They're be honest, keep current, attack the problem, not the person, and then act professionally, don't react.
So you told your this is Carly from Alexa. So you told your kids be professional when they're growing up. I just don't want my kids to act like animals. They're going to go from like animals to humans to professionals.
Yeah. Well, it was act, don't react. So it's
okay.
You know, I mean, it's take responsibility. You know, when there's an issue, it's not a time to point fingers. You know, it's a time to take that responsibility. And you know, ever since they were little, that's it. You know, no excuses. You know, take responsibility when you didn't do what you said you were going
to
do.
I need to print that up tonight. Another refrigerator.
You know, this is Lisa Delaware Steel, and I don't know if anyone has experience with this, but I think at Delaware Steel we get the sharing amongst, you know, working out the conflict, more or less. You know, shoving under the carpet is also a tactic, not a valued one, but okay. But the non-employed spouse, I think, is often under-recognized and extremely important and challenging because they are not at that table sitting around sharing the idea, perhaps, but yet they do have a voice and they are an influential part. And does anyone have experience or success or struggle with that?
So, yeah, so Lisa, this is Mark Brown sitting next to Taylor Ferland. So one of the ways, so it's our family business is pretty simple. It's my father and I. And one of the things we would do, if I wanted to convey something pretty sensitive to my father, I would go through my mother. Especially when I was looking to buy out his remaining shares. So the issue was he wanted to still feel like it was his business or at least have something. And I knew from the state planning point of view, it was prudent for him not to have it. It didn't make sense to purchase the remaining shares. So I went through my mother, through his wife. And she's the founder whisperer. She got it done.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting dynamic. That you can only do in a family business like that, right?
Mark, I actually think that Mark Mansfield Advertising, that is so true. And I think actually conflict sometimes, when dealt with in a professional way, is important. My father has been in the business since 1964. And if you go from 64 to 2017, look how we've all evolved and how the business is involved. And then I come in, and I have all these different ideas of how I think I can be better and make the company better. And he goes, whoa, 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 we need to step that back. You just got here. But having people with different visions and learning to handle those correctly is very, very important. I think if I got in there and just did what he said and said that was the right thing to do, I don't think that's necessarily a good vision. And also, I spend more time with my dad than I do with my wife. And my dad spends more time with me than he does with his wife because we're working every day together. So I can certainly relate to every once in a while calling my mom and saying, listen, you know, how is he today? We kind of got in a pretty big argument. Everything okay? Give me your thoughts. I mean, she's been around it longer than I have.
This is Gary Banks of Banks Industrial Group, and this is a struggle for me. I've got a son-in-law who's been in the business for 9 years, and now a son who's been in the business for less than 1 year. So I've got a real dynamic going on there, and I really, in fact, we're sitting here, my daughter is texting me. You know, I've got to get with her to help her coach her husband, because I've got two personalities going like this. They're both hard heads. Now, if I can get them going like this, we'll be unstoppable. But, you know, I'm struggling with it, and that's just the hardest part of the business, family business.
And Gary, this is Mary from Uniform Gear. I don't know that that's, you know, that we haven't had times ourselves like that, you know, where two people were just kind of, it's usually our youngest daughter, Jessica, and Jim, who were going, you know, head-to-head on things because they're the like personalities. But I think by having, like we were saying, be honest, to get them together and follow those principles, being honest, you have to put your feelings out there. And they have to work together to come to a resolution with that they're adults. You know, they want to be in this business. And just by following those four steps of principles, I think you could get them but I really believe that could really help get those lines of communication open and that they have to work together.
Yeah, this is Lisa Formica. The biggest thing, because I have three brothers, and I mean, we were it was bad, our conflict. One of the biggest things that has helped us is of those four principles, not being defensive, and seeing the value of everyone else's opinion, because we all have very different personalities. And, you know, when you bring an idea to the table, instead of being defensive and saying, oh, they're not going to like it, just hearing out their perspective and based on their personality, why. Like, one of my brothers is very, very conservative. I'm not conservative at all. So he's a good balance for me. So if they can appreciate at least one perspective about the other person that they bring to the table, you know, they'll do a lot better.
I also think, this is Lisa Delaware Steele, that having a founder whisperer in your mom, who happens to be particularly good in that area, while I completely respect that approach, and I think that when there's two of you, that makes sense. When you start dealing with in-laws and spouses and opinions, I caution against the lack of transparency, because I think that it becomes involved in marriages. And it's so hard because family businesses are taken home. When you and your dad, maybe Mark, go at it all day, and then you have to like show up for family dinner because it's a holiday or something, and your wife knows you're aggravated, and your mom feels bad that your dad's exhausted, and everyone's sort of, so the end run
maybe
of going,
spying on us.
Right. There's no way your dinner is any different than the rest of us,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So the whole idea of going to your daughter-in-law, I mean your daughter, to help her husband, I just caution, in my opinion, I struggle with the transparency. Who's speaking to whom? Who's doing the end run? Either we're all in or we're all out. I know I've tried to get everyone to the table, spouses included. It doesn't go so well. It's not a popular notion. But you know, that's why I said I think it's tricky, because you don't want to take it home for your daughter to deal with the husband so that they're kind of a protected unit. On the other hand, you probably need help, because I know I do. So, I mean, I think it's a common thing.
This is Carla Trotman from Electrobuft. I know companies that do have the in-laws, the people that are external to the company, have a meeting with a third party so that they could help manage it. Now, they are multi-generation, huge company, and they have like 30 to 50 people in these meetings, depending on who comes. And it's really helped them with issues and managing it and the direction that the company is going in. So depending on the size of your company, I mean, even if it's only like four or five people, it may help your company to have those as well. I don't need to do that at all. Like, my husband's just like, okay, whatever. are you making money? Good, okay. And so we don't deal with those challenges, but also, you know, we all have, I know this is going to be publicized, but we all have agreements with our spouses, that prenuptial agreements about the business in general. So it only talk to the business as not other assets, that they do not get the business because it's a family business. So they kind of know their place in that, you know, it's not really something of theirs, but it is a family business.
But Carla, this is Lisa again, not so much from an estate planning, but when you come home and you're really aggravated, that, you know, you call the family meeting, person X blew it off, or they're late, or they weren't present, or, you know, focused, and you vent to your spouse, who doesn't have a stake in the business, but you're aggravated. They're going to protect you, and they're going to feel bad for you, and they're going to be aggravated, maybe, I know in my family, with that family member who caused the aggravation. I mean, I think that's normal in any family, right? So I think it's that, those feelings, not the financial.
Well, I think it is, Carla, again, I think that it all ties into it.
like the financial aspect of it, delineating, okay, this is a family business, but also there's the relationship aspect of it that even though, I mean, I've learned through the years how to finesse the situation, how to deal with different people in my family, how to manage them. So I know, for example, my father's an engineer by trade, so he's data-driven. So if we're going to have an issue, I know that I need to come up with my data in order to support what it is I'm talking about. And then we delineated between home and office. I'm able to leave it at there, like, okay, you know, that's fine. And we walk away from it because I don't take it personally, because in the end, we monitor and measure a lot of things. And that that determines where the business is going. There's nothing emotional attached to it for me and for him as well. Like, we know that's what it is. We have those discussions. We decide on what it is there. I do get upset. But then I think about, is it worth it? No. What are we talking about, really? We're talking about a marketing budget. Okay, I'm not going to talk about the marketing budget over Easter dinner. You know, I'm not going to be upset about it over it. My grandmother sitting there talking about it. So I just really, and that's just because we're probably smaller than you are, that we don't operate that way. But I think that in your case, I can understand that you do bring those issues home, but I think every situation is a lot different.
Taylor Fernley, and I thank you very much.
Got it.
I'm learning here.
Got it all down.
I got it down pat.
Yeah.
Let me share, and then we want to move on to the next question, but let me just share one situation in our life that was not one of our prouder moments. We had two 50% owners, myself and my cousin, in the business. And there came a time in 1998 where I realized it was not working. Mm-hmm. And he was 10 years my senior. And we just didn't share a work ethic, a business philosophy. He had a sense of entitlement because his name was on the door. You know, list goes on and on. We all hear that stuff. And I worked with him for 3 years. And that probably was about 2 years too long, because I knew in my heart this was not going to work. And I actually walked in there and said, one of two things is going to happen. Either you go or I go, and I don't care. I certainly did. I didn't want to see a fourth generation company die on my watch. So we did work it all out. But my lessons learned was, I think this is, Gary, a little bit to yourself. You may not want to hear this, but plan for every eventuality. Someone being there a year, you know, son-in-law been there 9 years, stuff happens. And you got to always be on top of that. And I never thought this was going to get to where it was going to be. But having made that decision, having ended up in city hall, in family court, watching this thing deteriorate in front of your own eyes, fortunately, at the end of the day, it all worked out well. You know, I got the business and he got my money. And so the company has since grown since then, but my point again is it's tough, and you've got to recognize, it's nice when you just have you and your dad in there, and your mom,
right?
That you have people who you can work that off, but that doesn't always play out for all.
Ours is a much simpler construct.
Thanks for sharing that, Taylor. Yeah. Appreciate that. So this next question is another great one, and we know that, you know, in the greater Philadelphia region, that there's going to be multiple family businesses that are going to be making transitions to their next generation of family ownership within the next 5 to 10 years, and St. Joe's is really passionate about this topic of next generation leadership and education. So the question is, what kinds of things is your family doing to train and prepare the next generation of family leadership? I'd love to engage Kevin and Tom at the end of the table on this question and kind of kick it off with you guys.
Yeah, Tom Holt from Holt Logistics. As I mentioned earlier, we operate in the supply chain logistics space. Our focus really is on building relationships with the customers that we've been doing business with, to maintain those relationships over the years. With respect to the next generation, it is our main business, my sons, three of whom toured. 30s, one is in his late 20s. You know, they're expected to do just about anything from the ground up. Operations, sales. I have one in Columbia right now visiting customers. One just flew back from Miami late last night with my brother. And they're just hands on, travel the world, looking for new customers, building new relationships. And we expect that of them. Expect that everybody to be basically hands on for the business.
This is Kevin Fox from Capstone Group. I guess a little difficult for me to comment on next generation when being first generation owner. So, but a little caveat to that. So our dynamic, I guess, is a little unique in that my brother and I started Capstone in 2013, but we're actually second generation family business owners. So our parents, our mom and dad, had started the business in the late 80s when my brother and I were young. So we were fortunate enough to watch them build that from two employees to about 200 across the country, separate industry. It's a different business. We never really thought we would get involved in that business. It kind of was never really in the cards. So we knew we wanted to do something together. We had that entrepreneurial background. And an opportunity came up for us to start the Capstone Group together. So everything everybody's saying definitely rings true with us. Our father is on board as our chairman. But again, he doesn't have the industry background. And so we have different conflicts where my brother and I over the past 5 years have been trained in the industry. But he's forgotten more than we'll ever know about growing a business, operating a business. And while he's not active in the business day to day, he's our, you know, sounding board, our advisor, and we probably speak 4 or 5 times a day about different issues and you know, resolving conflicts. So I think what Anthony was saying about workspace, you know, there's things we talk about because I'm 30, my brother's 31. We have a very different vision about what our culture needs to be in the office. He built a business in the 80s. It was successful, and they sold it. Where, you know, for us, it is about culture and getting everybody to buy in, having a nice workspace where you bring it up to him and he's like, let's focus on sales.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a different dynamic, but what everybody is saying is issues we're facing now and we'll continue to face as we go on to the next generation.
I have a little, this is Mary Weldon from Uniform Gear. On a lighter note, our daughters now have grandchildren, or we have grandchildren by then. So when the kids have off from school, their ages are from 4 to 8. They actually come into the office. They're excited to go to work. And Ryan told me the other day, you know, Grammy, when I grow up, this is going to be my business. So we're kind of instilling that in them, and they have little jobs to do when they come in. Georgie, who's the 8-year-old, he helps me count out the retail drawers, you know. So it's kind of by almost letting them be a part of the business at a young age that we hope that they'll want to be involved later on.
Mary, that's a great way for them to build an emotional connection with
these
the business.
These kids are so smart today. You know, these little ones, you have to almost keep them busy.
Yeah. This is Tom again, Tom Hope from Hope Logistics. And we've also asked the kids to be, you know, as they come out of college, to go outside and see what it's like, what your experience was. And also to get some additional education as well, some more graduate side, or doesn't necessarily even have to be a graduate, but, you know, something that kind of further their development as they come back into the business, if they want, they have that choice of not coming back into the business as well.
This is Carla Trotman at Electrosoft, and being the second generation, what my family did to train me was really pushing me out to get another job. My undergraduate degree was in business logistics, so it had nothing to do with engineering or electronics at all. And I didn't plan on going into the family business at all. It wasn't until I had that corporate experience and I said, why am I using my talent to help other people make money?
That's right.
So I moved into family business, but and when my father offered to pay for graduate school, you know, I mean, that was the best move that I had ever made because it honestly made me smarter, I felt, because we were going through case studies, and after case studies and simulations and talking to other people who were in family businesses and were at the top of their businesses as well, and it was just 2 years of hard-hitting information after information and articles and books, and it really opened my eyes to where the business could go and how it could grow, and it was the best move that I ever made. So I even encourage my brothers to go back to school if they don't want to go back to school. I'm like, okay, what is your interest? Do you want to know more about the business? And we can set up an apprenticeship. So right now we're working with the state to have a funded apprenticeship so that they can learn the intricacies of electricity and wiring and cables and harness design at the local tech school, but it's also covered through the state apprenticeship program.
Cool.
And if they decide to go back to school, they can go back to school, but at least they're putting in the time to learning more about the business, and that's really what they encourage.
I do think, this is Lisa at Delaware Steel, that whether it's training the next generation or not, that for your other employees, everyone's not family, right? Unless you're very small and have the biggest family possible. And it's so important for family members to know at least as much, if not more, about what the business is actually doing and bring that expertise to the table. Even if you're a kid just starting out, you're not entitled. You have to kind of learn to do everything, and you are held to a higher standard. There's nothing you can do about it. So as a starting out, getting on the plane, going with your brothers, like you said, doing it and not waiting, I think is just so important.
Just to expand on what Tom said, this is Mark, William J. Mansfield. One thing that I regret is not what he said, is actually whether you go and get a secondary education, going to graduate school, business school, or working for somebody else. Mm-hmm. I've got time. My oldest is 7. So I'm not really thinking about that. If I'm lucky enough that he will work with me someday, I would love that. Mm-hmm. But one thing I will do is hopefully he graduates college, and I will tell him to go somewhere else first. Mm-hmm. I think that is really, really important for somebody else. If you're going to step into a family business, to go out and work for another company and take direction from somebody else and to learn to work with other people. Whether you come into a family business and start at the bottom, going somewhere else, I think, is something that would have done nothing but helped my career. And not only that, it's getting out in there and meeting other people, making contacts. It does nothing but help you.
Yeah, Mark Taylor Fernley, you're right. Any business book will tell you the same thing. Get out there 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it is. My son went and worked with one of my competitors down in D.C. I just can't believe that I love my son, but who would ever hire him being one of my competitors? But anyway, he was down there, and every Sunday he would call home, and because we don't see him that much. And he keep complaining, "Dad, I'm not learning anything. I'm not learning anything down here." And I said, "Kyle, you are learning a lot. You're learning a lot of what you don't want to do when you get out of there." And but the experience is good. He was there for about 1.5 years. I really wanted him down there for 2 or 3. But we had a real need, and he was interested in getting the hell out of there.
But it's experience.
Home. But it worked, and he's still talking about those experiences today. Mm-hmm. So valid point for all of us.
This is Gary Banks of Banks Industrial. I've had the luxury of my son come into the business. I mean, Naval Academy, 20 years in the Navy. They sent him to graduate school for business. And what better training, and how can I pass up on hiring somebody like this? And I get the advantage that I can trust them with my bank account. So it goes back to, and I agree with you, Tom, especially. I see some of these other businesses, and there was a company I was associated with, worked with, a representative. They brought the son running, and he says, "Send him out in the field and let him work, get his hands dirty." That's how you learn the business. You build it from the ground up.
It's Tom Holm again. It's funny because I have 2 brothers who are owners in the business with me. We're looking at succession, next generation. Their sons are much younger. Leo's 11 months younger than me. His son is 2 years old. You know that. And the other one's 10. He's my grandson's age. But this generation that's coming in, when I look back at my brothers and myself, they're much further ahead on the learning curve than we were. And I think partly it's a result of the times we live in, the technology and everything. Another part of it is just we brought them further along than really my father did. My father had us on an airplane at 16, 17 years old, traveling all around the world to see all our customers, meeting them for the first time. So I don't know if we're doing a good job or bad, but it's interesting to see how it's evolving in the next generation.
This is Mark Brown. So, we have a rule in our family that you have to work for someone else for 5 years. So I came out of, even though I kind of knew I would be in the business, out of college, I went right to Manhattan and work for global the map of the world. I mean, they, it was just, Dad said, everything you learned at the dinner table. You have to do it. So that's one of our principles. I have three kids. I don't, right now, none of them want to be in it. But my son, I have two daughters, my son works at Twitter in San Francisco. He would be great in the business. And so he's learning, just a couple years out of college. He's learning out there, learning a ton. Right now, doesn't want to be in there, but at least he's learning. And then one day he does want to come out, he's got that opportunity. One of the things beyond working elsewhere that I've done, particularly with him, is that I've BCC'd him over the years. And I've done it.
Oh, okay.
I've done it since he was in like middle school. Just like careful, strategic things that I think that I wanted to give him a window on. And he has never, he's never pushed back and said, "Stop! Please stop doing that." I think if I did it to my daughter, they would say, "Cut that out." After two, right? He's never done that, so he's a sponge. And then I also solicit his input, because he does have interest in this. He doesn't want to join it, but he has interest in business. So I solicit his point of view on sensitive and important decisions that I have.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Mark. So we're going to move along to the last question. We have about 10 minutes left together, and this is a really great one, so I want to give everybody the full opportunity to chime in. And it's around the topic of legacy. So the question is, what do you want your business's legacy to be, and how does that tie into your family values? And also, what are you doing on a daily basis to build up your business's legacy? I think, Taylor, you wanted to tackle that.
Yeah, I had Taylor Fernley here, and I really had 4 points that I want to share with you. And number one is to leave Fernley and Fernley a better place than when I arrived. And it was in very good shape when I arrived, so I've got my work cut out for me. I think, secondly, family members have always got to be involved in the process. And by that, I mean with the internal customer, with your employees, with your associates, as well as your external customers. There has to be, I refer to it as a friendly touch with absolutely everything that I do, because I'm a firm believer that you know, if you're not at the table, you're going to be on the menu. And you've really got to look at it from that standpoint. You've got to really be intimately involved in absolutely everything, with the big exception of avoiding micromanagement. Again, today you've got to hire well and get out of the way. You've heard that trite cliche, but it's something I think we all need to kind of live by. And some of us may fall victim to that. I think also, building something that's bigger than I am, leaving that legacy behind that my kids will be able to do even better. I think my son is going to be so much better than I am in what he does because of his personality and his drive. And I think some of it's the mentoring that I've been giving to him. And I think lastly is to never forget that we're a family business, but we're first a business family. And I think that is a message we're trying to convey to my son, but also to all the members of our management team, because we have a whole set of values, mission, so forth, that we don't go into a meeting that we don't live and breathe these things, and it really drives our behavior in how we manage ourselves and manage the folks around us.
This is Mary Weldon from Uniform Gear. Our business, we're probably one of the only small family businesses amongst our competitors. Everyone else are huge corporations. And it's kind of funny because we survive despite all of them getting better pricing than we do. So our main goal in our business is that our customers are completely satisfied. For some folks, that's hard. Some folks, it's not. And that's the legacy that's built this business. and we hope to continue. And we see that our daughters also are part of that concept. And I think for, I read a few quotes this morning that I thought was, I found it appropriate for today. It was, I don't want my children to follow in my footsteps. I want them to take the path next to me and go further than I could have ever dreamed of. And that's our legacy.
And then Gary, when, excuse me, when my father was in about to go into college, at the time the only jobs that were available to African Americans that were plentiful were in teaching. And he said, I don't want to be a teacher. He was given a scholarship to study math, mathematics, and he said, I don't want to do it because I don't want to go teach math. And he went into the military, he joined the Air Force, he traveled the world, and that's when he met, in Ethiopia, he met his first black engineer. And he said, I love what you do. And it took him to go to Ethiopia to figure out that's what he wanted to do. He saw it with his eyes, and that changed his life. And so what we've decided as a company, what we would do is we open our doors to minority students all the time. Our goal is to inspire more minorities to go into STEM-related fields and also to have them think as entrepreneurs and have that entrepreneurial spirit. I had a business as well, so I'm able to give the children that experience as well. We go out and speak a lot about that. And really, we come from a place of just giving, that there's always room to give. And that's just the spirit that we've always had about being connected to that. Because of that business and my parents' business, they've given back and helped build a village in Kenya because of the gifts of our business. So we try to bring it full circle.
Cool. Gary Banks, Banks Industrial Group. When my father passed away, my son wrote the eulogy. It was a letter to him. And he talked about his 1,000 acts of kindness, things that he did for other people. And what a better way to be remembered. So that's one thing that, you know, that we're passing down. And I've always thought it'd be really cool to really be able to affect somebody else's life. And that's some of the things we're getting our arms around, really trying to do through the business. You know, for example, we're working with the Ronald McDonald House. What a great way to be able to affect other people's lives. So I think, you know, as entrepreneurs, that's what we do. We really reach out. And it's in our, I think it's in our DNA to help other people.
This is Kevin Fox from Capstone Group. I love what Taylor said about not being a family business, but a business family. I think when we started Capstone Group in 2013, we started because of an opportunity, right? And then it wasn't until I had my aunt come on board as a CFO, my father as a chairman, that, you know, it becomes, it's not until those people get involved that it kind of changes your philosophy and your way of thinking. The reason I love what we're doing now is you're not only working for yourself at the end of the day, you're working to better the lives of the people you care about most. And, you know, again, you know, at the end of the day, we want clients and employees alike to feel like they're part of that Capstone family, but not only that, but be proud of it. So that's been our philosophy.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody. This has been a really dynamic discussion, and it's been so dynamic that the hour has just gone by way too quickly. So this concludes our think tank discussion, and on behalf of Smart CEO and the Initiative for Family Business and Entrepreneurship at St. Joseph's University, we just want to really thank you for your time, your insight, and for the great discussion today.